Ann Basie, I thought your matins was lovely.
Thanks. I'm rewriting a little bit because, you know, you revise, mm-hmm. revise, and then you say it, and then you can hear what you meant mm-hmm. to say, so I have quite a bit to do.
Well, it was that important. So, yeah. Talk about it a little bit.
Well, I'd like to say, first of all, that I was about 10 and a half the first time I came to Holden in 1967 with my family. And we came back 2 years later in 1969. And so I was a very little kid. We came because we were distantly related to Leo Bustad. People here always say Bustad, but I grew up saying Bustad.
So you're connected to Bustad? Have we ever talked about that?
No.
That's the name that is connected to my first visits. Harold Sigmar connected me to him from WSU.
See, because first he taught at UC Davis.
Okay.
So, and it's through our Mount Vernon connections that he's related to us somehow mm-hmm. or was. And he was a really good friend of my grandfather, Oscar Johnson. So, but he taught at UC Davis. So uh-huh. I knew his family when they all lived in Davis. And I remember uh-huh. being taken on a tour of the monkey labs years ago, mm-hmm. like I was maybe 7. And then they moved to Wazoo and then we didn't mm-hmm. see him much. But I'm pretty sure... My mother thinks maybe just Sunset Magazine. And I said, how could that be, Mom? Leo Bustad, you know, he gave us the Narnia books. He was always like this guy who was giving us cool stuff. So I'm sure that both Leo Bustad and Sunset had something to do with it. Mm. So then we came twice, but it didn't take because my mother and father were very surprised to get off the boat, come up the bus, and find themselves in Minnesota. They didn't know... what to make of that. And they didn't feel that the hospitality was very good. They felt like all the jokes were about Minnesota politics. And so it kind of didn't take for us. Mm. But it was a place I loved. And I remember being impressed with Roland Baynton. I thought he was the holiest person I'd ever met in my life. The theologian. The Martin Luther
biography. He wrote the biography
So he would... You
were here when he was here?
Yeah, I would just kind of stand near him. As sort of an impressionable child, I just thought he just seemed like a saint, and I wanted to stand around him. So, years later, I'm really rambling now, okay? At my church in Chicago, my parents came to visit, and they're kind of snobbish, you know? So the pastor gave some sermon, and as we left, my mother said to the pastor, who wasn't very, well, I shouldn't, never mind if this is being recorded. Anyway, she said, I've already heard that sermon. Roland Baynton gave it. So it was her way of kind of dismissing what he'd done. Like, you know. So I took 31 years off, and I came back in 2000 with my son Alex, who was 13 then.
Be careful with that power strip, kid.
Oh, yeah, don't turn off any switches.
Yeah, okay.
But right around when I was 25, I was in a phase of transition. In my notes, I can see in my journals, it says, shall I go to Holden? So I knew enough that I thought about coming there, but I didn't do it. So I waited 31 years, and I came back with Alex, and we visited, and then he loved it. And so then we came as family volunteers the next year, and then that's how I became the housekeeper. They put me on housekeeping.
So you gave Holden to your son?
Yeah, because he seemed to love it, and so I was reading all the small print, trying to figure out how he could come back, and the family volunteer program, because it was just a 2-week obligation, worked with the way that we did, so we could always come out here from Chicago and manage that, at least.
So you probably had chances to change your duties from housekeeping.
I think it just makes you feel very responsible for the village. One year they put me on painting, too. They don't have a... Uh-huh. summer head for painting anymore, but so I did paint actually quite a few window frames of I think Lodge 2 one summer. Was kind of fun.
So housekeeping though?
Well, on the operations side, I just think you end up feeling you sort of feel like you're at the heartbeat of the operations of the village so far as the guests are concerned. I really like the housekeepers. You know, some of us have come back years after years and year after year, and we really like each other.
Well, thanks for cleaning our room.
Yeah. And then a few times I got to do teaching staff stuff. That was good, thanks to you. And then a couple times through Global Vision, I got to be able to... Dorothy Bass was very nice. She included me a couple times, so... I had some story I was going to... this is another Leo Bustad story. So after I'd been here a couple of years and I knew I was going to maybe be on teaching staff in 2003, I had in my house in Chicago some cassettes, because in 2000 and 2001, they were really clearing out the old extra cassettes that they had taped of sessions for all those years. So they had boxes full and they wanted people to just take them out of here so they were free. Mm-hmm. So I took a bunch on different topics just to take home to kind of get a sense of, you know, Holden teaching sessions. And I took several by Leo Bustad. And so in 2002 or 3 or even 4, I don't know what, once when I was preparing for a teaching staff thing, I thought, well, let me listen to one of these Leo Bustad things. And it was on aging. And he talked about my grandfather, who was still alive. It was like a 1979 or a 1980 recording, and he was talking about, you know, my grandfather, his model for successful aging, Oscar Johnson of Sacramento. And that really sent shivers up my spine to think I'm listening to Leo Bustad talking about Papa in the present tense, you know,
Grandpa.
20 years later after his death.
I found the keys.
So, the keys. Hey, let's go.
I found them.
Great, let's go.
Well, I want to talk later more about the Bustad stuff and and Bainton too. I didn't know anything.
I was a kid. I have only tell you the how you sort of get auras. The aura was one of intense holiness and wisdom.
Yeah. Wow.
That was also the era of Will Hertzfeld. Do you know?
I don't know that name.
I ended up on staff with him at Global Mission. So Will Hertzfeld was an African American who came out of the maybe the Missouri Church, but also there was something else called like the Association of Evangelical Lutheran Churches that ended up merging when they created the ELCA. Mm. So he was an African American church leader, and he lived in Oakland, and he was very active. If you go in San Francisco to Moscone Center, there's a big civil rights statue and a waterfall. It's a civil rights plaza, and Will Hertzfeld is there. There's all the big life-sized pictures of, like, civil rights in the Bay Area. Shows pictures of Will Hertzfeld. So, anyway, it was funny that later in my life I ended up working with him, but that my parents remembered him a lot then because he was a very activist African-American Lutheran pastor.
So you've never talked about these early...
Yeah,
because
it was a long time ago.
And deep impression.
Mm, yeah.
Carried somehow into the adult circle of your life.
Yeah, I think if you've been a kid at Holden, you don't really forget it.
No.
I mean, you know, we didn't come back year after year, and I remember that I was more focused on my siblings. I wasn't making friends or sending postcards to people afterwards. It wasn't a place where we came away connected to other people, but it was a place where we really... you know, played, we were bowling, we were setting pins, all the things. It's great that I have that to come on. And that's why I knew that Alex needed to come back, because I had experienced it at 10 and a half and 12 and a half, I guess.
Well, it'd be interesting to listen to Sarah in
years
20
from now.
Years, because she's 10 now, 10 and a half. And
so what will you remember?
Yeah, so you don't
as
know.
As a grown-up.
But sitting in this car listening to Anne, you know, maybe... And your mom is a wonderful person. She sat here yesterday and
did
told
she?
Her
That's
story.
Great.
Yeah. So, Abriendo Caminos.
Yeah, Abriendo Caminos. Well, I remember how hard and how intently the staff prepared for Abriendo Caminos.
Did you see that?
Yeah. Well, I remember, first of all, noticing Pastor Cabrera and Bob Ekblad the year before. And Bob Ekblad, he was a regular in those days. So I was kind of aware that preparations were being made. But for the staff, you know, it was a big experiment. How to translate things, what to say. And it was a little controversial.
You're in housekeeping.
Yeah.
Watching this stuff.
Yeah, but, you know, we staff meetings were different in those days.
Everybody involved?
Yeah.
In your matins, not necessarily, not anything about the names and But what you said about the community, and you articulated this about the community before you had, or while you're in the early part of the drafting of your matins.
Yeah.
What about how the Abriendo community is essential or to your life?
It has become that way. I mean, it's sort of, in a way, it's not a surprise because Holden is that way. You know, you make relationships and you take Holden outside with you as you make deeper friendships and you're in touch with people. So it's not surprising that for me, Holden is inside and outside. But the Abriendos, it took a couple of years to have that same process. I wonder whether some of the other people connected immediately, and you know, people from Wenatchee who met people from Yakima. I can't even say that. But if I've connected with the people in Sacramento, Yakima, and Mount Vernon over the years, how much more have other people continued to do that? The difference for Abriendos was it's the same people, same week, so you have a chance to. I mean, I also remember seeing Luce Monroy for the first time, you know, Deanna in a high chair, and Luce not speaking much English yet and being sort of new. And then, you know, to have that year after year after year where finally here we are camping with Deanna for 2 years in a row, that's something that doesn't happen any other week of Holden.
Yeah, well, and those two hikes with where you're in a tent with Deanna and Jasmine.
Yeah, Sarah, you have to come hiking next time. It's pretty fun.
We were talking on the way down today about next year or some year.
These
guys are capable of hiking in from the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time we get down here and see Luce and Karen and Antonia and at the table, you know, Luce is saying, "Oh, I want to do this too."
Yeah, right.
So we'll stay at we'll stay at Anne's house.
Yeah.
And
sure.
We'll hike across the Seattle. And,
or you can go in at Marble Mount. I think that's shorter because then it's like one night to Stehekin. And then you can take the boat back. I've heard that. I've always been curious to do that.
Well, it would be nice to hit for everybody to come over
Cloudy Pass. Yeah, that would be good.
So, Luce just lit up at that end.
Well, you helped make that possible because I mean, for me too, all I have is a backpack and shoes and a couple things. So, with your knowledge of equipment and terrain, you really help. You make it safe for the rest of us who don't have as much experience.
Well, Luce said, "I have 2 weeks." And so we'd need to have those kids in boots and
I was gonna go down and look for socks, by the way.
Okay.
But back to Abriendo Caminos, it was during your class on Monday when I thought, look at all these things I'm taking credit for. I'm learning Spanish, I do citizenship, I go. It's like every single one of those things that keeps me involved with any kind of community came out of this. So that's been
really great
for me.
A rich minefield.
And you know, I feel like the Yakima people are the people that I got to know first, and then Sacramento, because in the last couple of years I've spent some time there.
You have.
The Cayos, and then Angelica and Rahina a bit. So Mount Vernon people are. I was realizing I don't know as much about people's stories, and it's a different group, you know, because so many people in that church come from Oaxaca.
Yeah.
It's a whole different experience of Mexican culture, and then the Cayos are Peruvian, so there's been the Peruvian angle in Sacramento, Michoacan in Yakima, in Oaxaca, in Mount Vernon, and I'm just starting to know people.
Well, thanks for that. I think it's the fact that it's on record here for Holden and for the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America that you said that.
I don't know. That's probably all I have to say about Holden. It's been a gift all around. My life kind of sucked in the 90s, you know. Had a lot of difficulties. And so coming to Holden in 2000 with Alex, I think things were starting to turn around. And then Holden, it's not necessarily that Holden made everything better, but my 2000s, the 2000 decade, was a lot better, and I think I attribute a lot of that to starting to come to Holden, because friendships, opportunities, teaching staff, meeting you, masters in creative writing, you know, you name it, there have been a lot of, I have really, really been able to flourish, I guess, in and outside of Holden, thanks to Holden, thanks to Abriendo.
What
Caminos.
A story. And, you've been living in a large world.
Yeah, it's been good.
Okay.
Let me say just a couple more things, too, about Alex.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, he's getting his PhD in philosophy. Mm. And I feel like Holden kids, you know, some go and do valiant work like Teach for America and volunteer in political things, and other people go to seminary. And then there's a few others who are academic, and Alex is sort of in that academic, I think, group of his friends here. But so his relationship to the church, like many people who are 25, is not too secure at the moment. Mm. But I feel like, I mean, I felt consistently through his teenage years that keeping him involved at Holden was keeping him engaged with questions of faith. And I always think that he became interested in philosophy, and the questions of philosophy grew directly out of, in Chicago, confirmation, and also here, you know, climbing trees, having deep conversations at the tops of trees with kids here. There's the long-term and then the short-term staff who knew them, the kids, really bonded for a few years, and there was a lot of space for thinking and questions, and that is something that I think he wouldn't have gotten anywhere else either. So I'm also grateful to Holden for sticking a mop in his hand when he was 13, so that, you know, he learned a lot about work and responsibility, and I didn't have to teach that lesson. And my last comment, during those years when your kid doesn't really want to necessarily talk to you, you know, Alex was always very afraid of bears, so we committed that we would always hike at least once during our stay. And because he was afraid of bears, he would say, "Talk, Mom." So our conversations were always good on the hikes. So even at times when we weren't connecting very well in other ways, because he was scared of bears, we talked, or I could sort of give my lectures on life. Girls, God,
and
whatever.
At his request.
Yeah, at his request, he would listen because he didn't want to meet a bear. So, that's it. That's the end of my Holden stories, and now I'm going to go and sweep the hotel stairs.
Well,
thank you, Jim.
All of that,
Okay. All right.